So last week we had a pop quiz, which was met with mixed results. And there's Felicia said to me, you know, I think we'd remember this better if each of those four things started with a letter, you know, created a word. And I got thinking, yeah, she could be right. And I'm always open to feedback from my congregation. So we were talking about having ears to hear. And I thought, ears, perfect. It's four letters. We got four things that we talked about that were a heart that is receptive to the kingdom is. And so the four things I came up with, and you can change them to whatever works for you. Okay, this is for you, not for me. I'm not saying there won't be another quiz down the road, though, to see if this worked. So, a heart that's receptive to the kingdom is, first of all, E, expectant listening. A heart that's receptive to the kingdom is expectant. So you're expecting to hear from God. You're expecting to see the kingdom breaking through. The next one is A, anxious. Now, not anxious in the worrying way, but anxious in the way that you're a kid and Christmas is coming. You're going, or anxious in the way of, you know, you've got bills to pay and your check is coming. You're looking forward to it. You're not only expectant, but you're like, yes, I need to hear from God. I'm excited to hear from God. It makes me run around the congregation when I hear from God. Thank you for that visual example. R is refined. Now, not refined like Masterpiece Theater, like I believe I heard from the Lord. Not like that, but refined as in when you think about refined fuel. It's filtered. It's pure. So we want to be listening with hearts that are filtering out all the noise and the distractions and just simply hearing what God has for us. And then S is submissive listening, a heart that is prepared to obey. When we hear from God, we actually follow through. So ears to hear, E-A-R-S, expectant, anxious, or anticipating, as my wife threw in for service, or whatever word you like, refined and submissive. Got it? What's the first one? Second one? Third one? Last one? It's working already. Thank you, Felicia. That's a phenomenal idea. All right. Well, that was great. So we're entering that time of year when frightening things happen. Our doorbell keeps ringing on a particular day. Now, that's not the frightening part. The frightening part is the next day for the teachers of all these little people, as half of their students are going, ding, 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 and the other half are out like a light. Terrifying, terrifying stuff. But there's this thing with this whole Halloween thing, and, you know, you ever notice, like, on TV, all of a sudden they're rolling all the scary movies, and people seem to like being scared, but only when you know that it's not real, right? Does anyone like being scared for real? Like, just that, I know there are some, you know, my son, you know, he likes to climb cliffs without ropes to catch him. Clearly there's some kind of thing going on. He would just say, well, I'm not afraid because I know what I'm doing, and Mr. Confidence. But, you know, some people like those kind of things. But in general, I think most of us don't like fear when it's something real. We just generally, fear we tend to think of as not a good thing, and yet we all have it in our lives. Kids. Oh, by the way, I didn't release you because it's Family Sunday. Parents are afraid of Family Sunday. I'm going to have to keep my kids in the service and not let them wiggle. They can wiggle. You're allowed, Family Sunday, you're allowed to wiggle, but kids, you have to participate. So are you here? You paying attention? Kids, what are some of the things people are scared of? Anyone? Yes. Public speaking, yes, thank you. That happens every time. Something else. I heard something over here. Where? Anyone? The dark? Okay. Anything else? My wife is afraid of snakes. Terrified of them. She can't even watch them on TV. I saw your hand back there. Clowns. Yeah. That's a whole other psychological discussion, isn't it? I don't know what's going on there. What? Snakes? Are you afraid of snakes? You are. I didn't think you were afraid of anything. In fact, I thought that was part of your problem, is that you weren't afraid of enough things, like gravity, hard ground. Leona? Mice. Some people are afraid of mice. Anything else? Cleaning. Yes. I'm related to at least three guys that are a little bit like, nah, that's not entirely true. Some of them are better at it than I am. Yeah, there are those things that we're afraid. Like, if we see them, we're afraid of that. But then there's also, I think there's different kinds of fear, right? There's kind of the instant fear. There's a fear, you know, you're walking along, you're on the hike, and a snake slithers across the path, and you go, blah! And the snake goes, blah! And he runs away, and you go, blah, you know? And then it's over. And it's over. But then there's this other kind of fear in our lives that's just always there under the surface. The fear of, you know, those fears are like, am I going to lose my job? Right? Or those fears of what's going to happen in this relationship or that relationship. Those fears like, what if I fail? What if I succeed? I was reading in a magazine the other week about a fear, and they called it, what was it called? The imposter syndrome. And it's a fear that people who are successful have, that they really don't believe deep inside that they should be successful, and that somehow it was a mistake, and sooner or later, everyone's going to figure it out. I've actually had that. My first few years as a pastor, actually sometimes now, usually we call it Monday, but there's times as a pastor you're going, what the heck? You know, like, I can't be responsible for, in any way, for other people's spirituality because mine is not there all the time. I mean, I grew up with some great pastors, so I kind of put them up on a pedestal. Then I became one, and I'm like, what? Since then, I've met a lot of other pastors. I realize most of them are like me. Which is good, in a way. But so, you know, that imposter fear, there's always the enemy going, they're going to find out. You're a fraud. Or you're not actually good enough. So sooner or later, your luck's going to run out. Or whatever. There's those kind of fears. And we kind of walk through life, and sometimes it's those fears we talked about in the shape class, as we were talking about our gifts and our calling. And sometimes people are afraid to step out and serve in the church or Jesus, because, like, again, what if I fail? Or what if I'm wrong? What if this isn't my calling? What if? So I think there's that fear of the future, that fear of the unknown can paralyze us. And it's rough to go through life like that. Anyone have those kind of fears in your life anytime lately? All right, and the rest of you are lying. Because I know we all go through that. I don't think you're really lying. I just feel like the coffee hasn't hit your bloodstream yet. And you're like, lift my arm. Pastor Tom, you're so demanding. Fear. I think there's good fear and there's bad fear. What do you mean? What kind of fear could be good fear? Well, I think God obviously created me. God gave me the capacity to have fear. And part of that was to keep me alive. Because fear is a great motivator towards fight or flight. So when I'm crossing Ira Hoffman Parkway or whatever it's called, and there's a large truck coming very fast at me, something in my brain kicks off, you should be afraid of being hit by that truck, therefore walk faster. That's a helpful thing, you know? Or you shouldn't jump off that high cliff, Adrian. You know, there are fears that are good. When Ben was little, Karen had an exercise bike in the living room. And he thought it would be a fantastic idea, 4 years old, to stand on the seat and rock it back and forth like he was surfing. This ended up with pins in the arm. It was nasty. But, you know, we prayed that God would give him more fear. So it's not always a bad thing. There can be a legitimate kind of fear. But there is definitely an illegitimate kind of fear. There is kind of a fear that God does not want us to have. And I'm going to look at this next story as we keep moving through the book of Mark, the Gospel of Mark, and we're going to be chapter 4, beginning with verse 35. And it's interesting that we moved from a series of parables about having a receptive heart, about hearing from God. And we talked about, you know, we end every sermon with, what are you hearing from God and how is he asking you to cooperate? Whenever you hear from God, he's going to also be asking you to adapt your life to that truth in some way. He's going to ask you to respond. He's going to ask you to change something. And at some point, one of those times when he asks you to do that, the thing that's going to keep you from doing it is, any guesses? Fear. But God, what if this happens or that happens? God, what if I fail? What if I'm not good enough? God, da, da, da. And we hear all the lies. And so sometimes we're simply not responding. Our heart isn't receptive because it's paralyzed by fear. And so I think it's not on accident that after coming out of a, a series of parables that are talking about hearing from God and responding to him, we go straight into a story. In fact, Jesus just finished teaching these parables from being out in the boat. The crowd got thick again. So he's like, guys, I'm going to get in the boat. You push it out a little. That way the crowd isn't, you know, cramming my style here. And he preached these parables from the boat. And that's where we're going to start our passage with verse 35. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, let us go across to the other side. He's talking about the Sea of Galilee, which is nothing more than a very grandiose lake. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat just as he was. So just as he was, it's like they didn't come ashore. He got out, said, all right, let's go. He just finished preaching. He's still in the boat. He's like, let's go. They're like, okay. They're all jumping the boats. And other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose. This is a wind storm. When I was a kid, I always imagined the wind and the rain. And, you know, I imagined a New England storm or a Long Island storm. But it's a windstorm. And the kind of windstorms that happened and still happen at the Sea of Galilee, it's a lake and it's really surrounded by mountains. And you have the desert on the other side of the mountains. And the way it works is the way the heat works in the desert and the atmospheric conditions create these winds that come out of the desert and they really funnel themselves through the mountains. And it's similar to how light, which is all around us right now, it's, you know, broad and nice, but if you press the light down into a compressed space, it becomes a laser. And while this light is pleasant to your eyes, a laser in your eye would not feel good. And the wind is like a wind laser. And so it comes through the mountains, it's compressed through these mountain passes, and it hits the lake, and boom, out of nowhere, the wind kicks up and the waves kick up. And they're going across in these boats. And it says that the windstorm arose and the waves were breaking into the boat so that the boat was already filling with water. At this point, our professional fishermen are like, no problem, we've got this. Anyone remember the story? Not really. It's not what went down at all. But he was in the stern, Jesus, asleep on a cushion. And they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? Now, what was going on? You know, I used to read this passage and kind of interpret this as things are going bad. The boat's getting ready to sink. Jesus in the boat. They know Jesus can save them, so they kind of, you know, kick him a little and say, wake up, save us. Don't you care about us? If you cared about us, you'd save us. But I'm not sure I really interpret it that way anymore because of the way the rest of the story plays out. What I think is happening here is we're professional fishermen. We've been around this before. We know this is a bad situation. Our boat is filling with water. We are scared. We know we should be scared. And you're taking a nap? Why aren't you scared too? What is going on, Jesus? Get with the program and start being scared. Is perhaps what's going on here. And he awoke and he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased. And there was a great calm. So like, whoa. Interesting. He said to them, why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? And this sounds kind of like he's chiding them and so forth. Well, I'm wondering, and I'm going to talk about this a little later. This is a really important question for us. So he calms the storm, says, why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? And I love their response. Is it gratitude? They're like, yes, Lord, you're awesome. So he's kind of like, oh, why are you afraid? And what's the next thing to do? And they were filled with great fear. So they went from being afraid of the waves to being afraid of Jesus, which is at least theologically more correct because we're supposed to be God-fearing. And they said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? See, that's why I don't think they were waking him up saying, Jesus, save us. Because then why would they have been shocked when he did it, right? They're going, whoa, how could he, what's going on? How is he able to do that? So they didn't expect him to be able to do that. So that's not why they woke him up. They just woke him up because misery loves company. You're not going to be all chill in the back while we're freaking out. You need to freak out too. None of us are ever like that, right? Right? You ever been around that? You're freaking out and maybe your spouse is calm and you're like, stop being calm. This is, don't you really like the gravity of the situation? So they filled with great fear, said to one another, who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? I think it's really important that we recognize a few things. Actually, before I get into this, I'll go back to the story. I mentioned that there is legitimate fear. Those waves were big, and the boat was filling up with water, and they were fishermen. They know what happens when a boat fills up with water. Eventually, it's all the way full, and it's under the water. It was a short leap for them. They were not, you know, logisticians, but they could figure out that if the boat's under the water, we're under the water. And they were freaking out. This was a legitimate fear. They didn't want to drown. They're like, we have to do something, but we don't know what to do. So the waves, it was a legitimate fear as far as that goes. They were real. They weren't fake waves. Sometimes our fears are real. Sometimes they're not. You talk about different things people are afraid of. When I was younger, as a kid, my house was laid out in such a way that the kind of family room everyone stayed in and the kitchen where we ate in were in the back half of the house. And the front was a dining room that was mostly used for holidays and a living room that was really only used for company. And those rooms didn't really have light switches. They just had lamps where you'd pull the chain or whatever. And so those rooms were usually unused and unlit. The problem was you had to go through that unlit living room to get upstairs to where I slept. And as a youngster, you had to run through a dark room. You could have walked through it if you were stupid, but they weren't going to get me because I wasn't afraid of the dark. No, no, no. The dark is harmless. It's just the absence of light. What I was afraid of was the brain-sucking monsters hiding in the dark. All right? And I knew where they were because the front where people come in the door, that's where they hid, just waiting. So I had to make sure I had a good head of steam picking up before I past that particular area, because that's where they were going to get me. That's where the grabbing was going to happen. And so I'd bolt through there. That was not a legitimate fear. I grew to understand that there were no brain-sucking monsters. Actually, probably the only brain-sucking monster in the house was probably in the back family room, and it had like three or four channels, mostly the major networks. And we weren't afraid of it, and we perhaps should have been. But I grew up. By 18, I was sure there were no brain-sucking monsters. But the thing is, after all those years of booking through that room really fast, you kind of still, even though I didn't believe any of that, I knew it was a fake fear, I still had that niggling sense of, yeah, I'm going to still go fast through this room just in case, right? I mean, maybe it's just ingrained habits. Anyone like that? You've got fears? You know it's an illegitimate fear. Your brain is telling you it's an illegitimate fear, but in your heart, you're still going, right? Anyway, 33 years ago today, I was 18. I was going through that room. I knew there were no brain-sucking monsters. It was pitch black. But because of habit, I decided I would run through the room. My mother actually had asked me to go get something from upstairs. I don't know why. Well, I know why now. And as I was running through the room, the lights went on, and brain-sucking monsters came from everywhere. They looked like my friends and family. They were all saying surprise and happy birthday. And you know why I was trying to keep my birthday on a down low? Now I was traumatized. Surprise parties freak people out. The only people like them are the people doing the surprising. Yeah, learn that now. The thing is, there's always someone who knows it and puts it there for you, so can't win. So there are legitimate fears and illegitimate fears. Sometimes the waves are real. Sometimes the waves are simply brain-sucking monsters that don't exist. And we need to know which they are. Then there's the boat. I want you to notice something. They freaked out because they were putting all their trust in the boat. The water was coming in the boat. The boat was starting to sink. And they realized the thing we put all our trust in is going down. What do we do now? We all have the waves in our lives, but we all have boats in our lives. We all have things in our life that we try to put all our trust in. For some of us, our career. It could be our marriage. It could be particular people in our lives. It could be our finances. It could be, you name it. Could be ourselves, our abilities. It could be, you know what it is for you. That thing, if you lost, you'd be like, oh, what would I do? We all have those boats in our lives. First thing I want you to know is, that's okay on one level. You'll notice that in the beginning of the story, when evening came, he said, let's go across the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat just as he was. Jesus was in the boat to start with. Jesus wasn't standing on the water. That's a later story. But he wasn't standing like all right, I'm going to go preach from them from out there in the lake. And so he just went and walked on the water out to the middle of the lake and preached. I think that would have had a great effect. If I could do that preaching, I probably would. But, you know, no, Jesus got in the boat. And then when he said, let's go to the other side, they all got in the boat. And Jesus didn't scold them. He didn't say, hey, you jerks, why are you getting in the boat? Don't you trust me? Don't you think I can get you across the lake without a boat? He doesn't do that. He says, you got a boat. Boats are useful going across the water. Get in the boat. It's okay to trust the boat to do what boats do. But then the problem comes later on when the storm kicks up and the boat is failing and they freak out and they think it's all over. And he says, he gets to this question. Why are you so afraid? Have you so little faith? Have you still no faith? Like, we have a lot of faith in the boat, but the boat's failing us. So now we don't know what to have faith in. And that's the problem. The problem is not having a boat. The problem is putting all your faith in your boat. Whatever your boat is in your life, if you put all your faith in that, it can and probably will let you down. We have a math problem here. See, the disciples are going, one, the waves, plus one, the sinking boat, equals two, I'm dead. And Jesus is saying, no, you got your numbers wrong, because it's one, the waves, plus two, the boat, plus three, the king of the universe. He's in the boat. Jesus is in the boat. And he's saying the problem wasn't that you put some of your faith in the boat. The problem is that you put all your faith in the boat. And you need to put your faith in me. You need to understand who I really am. And that's what they come to understand at the end. When he says, peace, be still, and the storm settles. And they recognize, oh, this guy's the real deal. And when we come up against the waves in our lives, and we consider, and we start feeling like our boat is going down, we need to recognize that Jesus, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, Jesus is in the boat with you. And he has his plans for you, and they are great plans. Am I saying they're going to work out the way you think they should? No. We can go through the Hebrews chapter 11, you know, the hall of fame of faith, they call it. But then it also describes people being cut in half by saws and eaten by lions and all these great things. And we're going, where was Jesus for those guys? Well, they're spending eternity in heaven with them. Jesus had a plan. It didn't look like maybe they would have preferred not to have been eaten by lions. I don't know. I'm going to guess. If it were me, I'd forgo the whole lion-eating thing. Maybe not you. Maybe you have the spiritual gift of martyrdom. And you're like, yes, I am so excited to be glorifying God in this way. There are people like that. That is a biblical spiritual gift. I don't have it. When I see a truck coming, I run faster. Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? I think that question is an important one because fear is like an indicator light on the dashboard of our car. Some people call them an idiot light. For me, that's more appropriate because I don't know what's happening. The check engine light comes on, right? You don't know what's wrong with the engine. You don't know if there's something wrong with the engine. You know if the light comes on, you just got to check the engine because something's going on. The light doesn't tell you what's going on. It tells you that something's going on. Our emotions are very much like that. I grew up in a tradition that said, you have to ignore emotions because faith is not an emotional thing. It's all because, you know, they're all like, it's all about what you know and reason. But that's not entirely true because God created me with a mind, but also with a heart. He created me with intellect and emotion, and he engages with all of me. He engages with me emotionally, mentally, psychologically, physically, and he engages with me in every way. And so we ignore our emotions at our peril. Don't let your emotions control you. But your emotions are like the idiot light on the dashboard of your life. When you feel fear, bing, the light goes on. We need to take a step back and ask ourselves Jesus' question, why are you still so afraid? Have you still no faith? The have you still no faith is really, he's saying, what are you putting your trust in? And I think if we ask ourselves, why am I afraid? What am I putting my trust in whenever we feel fear? This works, by the way, with anger. It works with any number of negative emotions, what we consider negative emotions. Why am I angry? What am I putting my trust in? Why am I afraid? What am I putting my trust in? And we stop and ask those questions that Jesus had. I think Jesus was trying to diagnose what was going on in their hearts because he wanted to disciple them into a more abundant life. He wasn't just chastising them. Like, you guys are a bunch of losers because you're afraid. Like, that's not the Jesus I know. He wasn't just about the business of belittling. I mean, that's how maybe a lot of churches work. But that's not how Jesus works. It's not just about belittling. It's about trying to help us figure out what's going on in our hearts that needs to be transformed so we can become more like him. And so if you know Jesus, he's in the boat, and he's going to be asking you those questions. If you don't know Jesus, invite him in your boat. You will never regret that, even when the lions come. Definitely not when the waves come. And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, "Who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" And they asked the third big question. Three great questions to ask yourself when you're feeling fear. One, why am I so afraid? Two, where's my faith? Is it in the boat? Three, who is this then that even the sea and the wind obey him? Who is this Jesus? If you're living in fear, you do not have a clear enough picture of who Jesus Christ is and who he wants to be in your life. Amen? We all need that. We need to preach that gospel to ourselves every single day. We need to remind ourselves who Jesus is. When you're going through that time in your job or in your family or in your health and you're going, I'm paralyzed because I don't know what's going to happen. You don't need to know what's going to happen because he knows what's going to happen. What you need to know is, why am I so afraid? Where's my faith? What is it in? And who is Jesus? So what is it that you're afraid of? What are you most fearful about today or lately? Is it your job? Is it your finances? Is it your family situation? Is it your relationship with God? Is it your future? Is it, what is it? What are your waves? What is your boat? Who is Jesus? It's not hard to figure out what keeps you anxious, not in the good way that we talked about earlier, but what gives you anxiety the most often. It's the thing that when you're lying there at night that's negative that your mind most often goes to, right? When your brain has nothing else to do, it's either going to go someplace positive or it's going to go someplace negative. If it's going to the negative, you found your waves. Now it's time to just prayerfully contemplate, where am I putting my faith? Because a lot of where we're putting our faith reflects upon the waves, right? If the disciples were going across a desert, they would have been in a dune buggy. Or they had a boat, so it was waves. It correlates. If I'm fearful about my finances, and that's what I worry about all the time, then maybe I'm putting my boat is my financial situation. I believe I can't have peace unless I've got all my financial ducks in the row. But maybe Jesus is saying, yeah, you know what, that's going to take a while, but I'm in that boat with you. I will walk with you through this. You don't need to be afraid. Does it mean you need to do nothing? He did go out on the lake with a boat, right? You guys remember the story about the flood? There was a guy, and the flood came in. Maybe it was over in Houston. And he climbed up to the first floor of the house, and the rowboat came to the window and said, "Jump in the boat, we'll get you to safety." And he said, no, I'm trusting God. And then the water kept rising. He went up one floor in the house. A speedboat came by, you know, from the Coast Guard, and they said, "Climb in the boat, we'll get you to safety." He said, no, I'm trusting God. Water kept coming up. He was up on the peak of the roof. Helicopter comes, drops a rope ladder. And they say, "Climb the rope ladder, we'll get you to safety." He says, no, I'm trusting God. The helicopter flies away, the water keeps going up, the man drowns, and he dies. He gets to heaven, he says, "God, where were you? I was trusting you to save me." Jesus says, "I sent a rowboat, I sent a speedboat, and I sent a helicopter. What else do you want?" You know, we don't want to be testing God in this. You know what I'm saying? We want to be trusting God, but we don't want to be like, "So therefore I will do nothing, and we'll see if God gets me out of this." Like, I am in such miserable debt, but I'm not going to, like, create a healthy budget because Jesus will get me out of this. Jesus gave you a brain. He gave you a church body. He's given you the resources. And he wants you to use the resources you have, not trusting only in them. Just like they had the boat. It was okay to trust in the boat, but not only the boat, but the master in the boat. So how do we cultivate faith and break free from fear? I think if we ask those questions, and it's isn't it interesting, we went from a parable about a faith so small it was like a mustard seed, and it grew to be like the largest of bushes, and then we move into a story of fear. He's saying, where is your faith? Have you still so little faith? The problem wasn't how little faith they had. It was the problem how little faith they had in Jesus. See, your problems are not solved by the largeness of your faith, but by the object of your faith. You can have all the faith in the world in something that will fail you, like a boat. You're still going down. But if you just have a little bit of faith in the master of the universe, he's there. He steps in. That's why 2 Timothy 1:7, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and of love and of self-control. Those are three powerful things to think about. Usually we look at that verse and we just go, God's not giving me a spirit of fear, so I shouldn't be afraid. And if I am afraid, I'm going to feel a little guilty and I'm going to try to work up not being afraid. Courage, 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 courage. You know, courage. With the lion. I love that guy. Anyway, but it says not a spirit of fear, but of power. We got to recognize who is this that even the winds and the waves obey him. There's the power of God, and we need to recognize that if Jesus is in our lives, we have access to the power of God. Two, love. Love, perfect love, casts out fear, is what Scripture tells us. Love is a powerful thing. You ever have someone in your life you're afraid of? Start praying for them. It works with that. You got someone you're angry at? Start praying for them. Someone you're worried about? Pray for them. Someone, whatever, name your sin. But there's something about praying for them which connects us to them in love through God that enables us to put those eternity goggles on and start seeing people's situations through Jesus' eyes rather than our own. And when we see things through Jesus' eyes, the waves look small. And so we need to say, our mustard seed is enough. Let's focus it on Jesus, on his power, on his love, and on self-control. Like I said, fear isn't always bad. Fear is a good servant, but a terrible master, like most things. Only the master is a good master. Only Jesus is a good master. We need to put him in control. We don't want our fear to control us. And that's the problem with many of us. Our fear controls us. We don't have self-control. But that's not God. He didn't create us to be a servant of fear, but to live in power and love and self-control. So the questions are, why are you so afraid? What is it that stirs fear in your mind and your heart and your soul? Why are you so afraid of it? What's your boat? Where are you putting your trust? And who do you really believe Jesus is? Let's bow our heads. What does your heavenly, loving Heavenly Father want you to know today? What is he speaking to you? Allow the Holy Spirit in this time of silence to speak to your heart, to just kind of point out, and maybe he's done it already during the message, but point out, here's that thing. Here's your waves this week. Here's that thing that you're allowing to build the fear in your life, to allow fear have control. What is that thing? What does he want you to know? What does God want you to know about your boat, whatever it is you're putting your trust in? What does God want you to know about his son? And the second question is, how will you cooperate with what he's doing in and through you? God doesn't give you information just so you can go, oh, wow, that's really interesting. I never realized that I was putting all my trust in that before. No, he always gives us information so we can do something with it, because he wants us to adjust our lives to the truth that he's revealing to us. So the second question is, how will you adjust your life to what God is saying to you this morning so that he can work in you and so that he can work through you? give you a moment to reflect on that.